Right, well, you may have noticed we have different decorations. That might have stood out to you. Or you may have noticed the new verse up here on our verse board, which, by the way, if you have a memorization program, these would be great verses to commit to memory. They are all ones that are significant portions of the books that we study. But all of these signs are communicating we are starting a new series. We finished Philippians last week. We are going into the book of Joshua. And our theme for the book of Joshua is to be bold. And we're going to see that through the whole book. But as I studied Joshua this week, and we're looking at the first four verses of the book as we jump in, I noticed something that stuck out to me. And it's something that I've noticed in the past. I have spent years watching and studying cinema. And it's not just cinema. It's actually many, many forms of literature share this theme. And it is something that you will often find coming up over and over again in the stories that matter most. And I want to show you just a few examples of those this morning, but I've got to give a warning first. This is going to be a bit of a spoiler. If you have not seen these movies, it could potentially spoil these movies for you because these are some significant moments in some pretty significant stories. Now, the most recent clip I'm about to show you is 7 years old. So I figure that is outside the statute of limitations. You should have seen these movies by now. They have been out for at least 7 years. If you have not, every single one of them is worth watching, even if it gets spoiled for you this morning. So without further ado, I want to see if you can see the theme that sticks out in significant stories the way that I noticed it. Go.
Don't move.
Won't go far.
Should have been you.
Mine should have hit us. Should have hit me.
It crossed my mind. I'm gone, God.
Doc will bring you around. I look to be bored by many more sermons before you slip. Just don't move.
Can't bother to be around, boy. Not one of your crew.
Yes, you are.
You shall not pass!
Avada Kedavra.
You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody catch the theme? Old people dying, you got it. Specifically, the mentor, right? It's the mentor figure. In many, if not most, great stories, there is a section just before, or usually right around the middle, where the death of the mentor takes place. And it happens so that the hero of the story can then go on and become the hero they need to be. To step into the role that they need to fill. To go do the thing that they have been called to do. As we jump into Joshua, as we begin our journey through Joshua, we are actually picking up at just that point in the life of Israel. See, Joshua, if you don't know, is the sixth book of the New Testament. The first five books of the New Testament are referred to as the Pentateuch, which is, again, just one of those Jeopardy terms for you. Penta meaning five. There are five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, all five of those written by the leader of Israel, Moses, telling the story from the beginning of the world up through the point that he has led them out of captivity in Egypt. And now we are picking up in the book of Joshua. And it's significant because this is how Joshua, verse 1, starts. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. Where Joshua is picking up is immediately following the death of Moses. But if you haven't read the first five books of the Bible, if you didn't go home last week and go, oh, he's going to be in Joshua, so what do I need? I got to read Joshua, Genesis, I've got to read Exodus. If you didn't do that, I want to just get us up to speed with where we are at in the story. Because this first verse of Joshua tells us this is not the beginning of Israel's story. There is something that has come before, because now we are picking it up after the death of Moses. And if you have not followed the story of Israel, here's how it went. This is a picture of the Middle East. If you do not recognize, down in that bottom left-hand corner is Egypt. So you're actually looking at the northeast corner of the continent of Africa. If you kept going down and to the left, you would eventually see the whole of the continent of Africa. And if you come up to the right-hand side, or the easternmost part of this map, towards the top, it currently says Canaan. But if you've been watching the news at all lately, some of those landmarks should look familiar to you, because that is where the modern-day country of Israel resides. If you were to follow that blue, the Great Sea, the Sea of the Philistines, or what we today call the Mediterranean, if you were to follow that up and around to the north, you would come to Turkey, and then traveling west, you'd go to Greece, and then further is Italy, and then over into France and Spain. This is the Mediterranean Sea that we're looking at. But over on that left-hand side, you'll see the three red arrows. That is Egypt. That is where they were coming out of. And if you follow those red arrows down, Moses would eventually lead them down to Mount Sinai, which is, if you see the upside-down triangle of land, it's at the bottom peak of that triangle. You would find Mount Sinai. This is where God made the covenant with his people and said that the children of Israel were going to be his people, and that he was going to be their God. From there, they continued to travel north and then a little bit to the west until the point that they were at the border of the Promised Land, ready to go into the Promised Land. And Israel got scared. And under Moses' leadership, they got scared and they said, you know what, it's too scary. We're not sure we want to go in. So God has sent them out to travel and wander in the wilderness for 40 years. With the promise that every adult, everyone who was over the age of 13 at the period of time that they were there, would die before they went into the Promised Land. So they wandered in the desert for 40 years while that took place, and now finally they have continued that last little bit of red up to the north, and they are ready to cross into the land that was promised to them. Moses has led them right to the cusp of entering into the Promised Land, the reason they left Egypt, what God had told them was theirs. Problem is, because of an incident in his life, Moses wasn't going to get to go in. In fact, we read that story in Deuteronomy chapter 32. This is still one of the books. Moses actually wrote this passage. He says, this is God speaking to Moses. He says, go up to the mountain of Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is the land of Moab, opposite of Jericho, and view the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel for a possession, and die on the mountain which you go up, and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died in Mount Hor, and was gathered to his people, because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, and because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel. For you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go there, into the land that I am giving to the people of Israel. See, what God is reminding the people of Israel of through Moses is that there was an incident years prior to this. In fact, there were two. One, both times Israel was in the wilderness, they had no water. They were going to die of thirst. And the first time, Moses came to God and said, "We have no water. We're going to die of thirst." And God told Moses, "Moses, go. I want you to take your staff, hit the rock, water will come up." So Moses gathers the people of Israel. He goes out, he pulls out his staff, and he hits the rock, and water comes out. Enough water so that all the people of Israel could drink and be saved. Then there's this second incident, the one at Meribah Kadesh, where God comes to Moses, again, they're without water, and Moses says to God, "God, we're without water, we need water." And this time God says to Moses, "Moses, I want you to go, I want you to find the rock, and I want you to talk to it. I want you to speak to the rock. That's what I want you to do." So Moses gets up, he goes to the rock, but it goes differently this time, because this time he gets to the rock, and he hears the people complaining. He hears the people whining and being miserable, and he gets angry. And he declares to the people, "What in the world do I have to do to show you that God is, that the Lord is your God? What do I have to do?" And he gets angry, he pulls out his staff, and he strikes the rock. And water comes out, just like last time. Except this time, Moses has not been obedient. Because remember, God did not tell him to strike the rock this time. He told him to speak to the rock. And what was even more than that, God comes to him and he goes, what do you mean, what do you have to do? He said, "Moses, since when have you been doing anything? Did you bring water last time? You didn't bring water this time." He's like, "The only one who brought water out of the rock was me. And because you did not obey, because you did not treat me as the one who's in charge, because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel, you are no longer going to get to go into the promised land." What we see here, though, is that God was actually gracious to Moses. He was merciful. Because after all that Moses did, leading the people out of Israel, out of Egypt, leading them to the promised land, God took him up on a mountain and let him see what was about to happen. Let him see the land that they were about to take. He gave Moses this little bit of mercy right at the end to show him what God had accomplished through him. But now, the Israelite nation is sitting on the border of their promised land. And Moses, their hero, their mentor, the one who had led them out of Egypt, out of 400 years of slavery, across the desert, through the wilderness, all the way to the waters of Jordan, that Moses is dead. And God is moving in a new direction. Because it says, the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, who was Moses' assistant. This is who God is now speaking to. Which again begs the question, who is this guy? Where did Joshua come from? Because this is not, it may be the first time we're hearing it, but it is not the first time Israel has heard of Joshua. Not only was Joshua one of their great generals, we see that as he leads the army into battle multiple times through Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, but he is also one of two adults who were excluded from the death sentence of the nation of Israel. And we see that in a story in Numbers chapter 14. Because Moses wrote down, he said, "And Joshua, who is the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were amongst those who had spied out the land, they tore their clothes and said to the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not fear the people of this land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Then all the congregation said to stone them with stones. This is a crazy story, right? So God has used Moses to lead them out of Egypt, lead them across the desert like we saw. And this is the first time they're standing before their promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. Everything that they have worked for up to this point is right there. So Moses sends 12 spies into the land to come back and tell them what it looks like. Those 12 spies go into the land and they come back, and 10 of them are like, uh-uh. They're giants. They're huge. I mean, they're bundles of grapes. Grapes are the size of human beings. It is insane. We absolutely cannot do this. And Joshua and Caleb are the other two spies who come back and say, guys, no, you don't understand. The Lord delights in us. It doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter how challenging it's going to be or how hard of a fight it's going to be. The Lord delights in us. He's going to bring us into the land. He's going to give it to us because he promised it to us. It's a great land. Yes, the grapes are the size of human beings. It flows with milk and honey. Everything about this land is awesome, and it's ours. The only thing we have to do is not rebel against God. We don't fear the people of the land. He says their protection is removed from them. They have nothing to protect them. We have God. How could we possibly lose? Don't be afraid. And upon hearing that, the people of Israel try to stone them to death. Because they're like, nope, we like the other 10 people's report better. They try to stone them to death. And it's at this point in the story that God says, okay, you have made your choice. You chose to rebel. You chose to not take the land when I told you to take the land. As a result, you're not going to get the land. And God says every adult at this point in time will die before entering the land. He made two exceptions, Joshua and Caleb, two spies who came back and said, we can do it. God made an exception for them. So now, as they are once again standing on the edge of the Jordan, their mentor, the one, their hero, the one who's brought them this far, has died. Every other adult who was alive at this period of time has died. And now Joshua, the one who has already been in the land and come back and reported, says, God says he's the one who's now in charge. And God is now coming to Joshua to give him his marching orders, to tell him, here is what we are going to do. Here is what the nation of Israel is going to do. And he starts with this. Moses, my servant, is dead. I am wondering if that didn't feel like the most obvious statement in the world to Joshua. Like, no, really? But we've got to remember where Joshua is. First of all, Moses did not die in the midst of the people of Israel. God took Moses up on a mountain, and he died up on a mountain out of the view of the nation of Israel. So God is confirming to Joshua, yeah, he's not coming back. When I took him up on that mountain, that was it. That was the end. It's you now. He's not coming back. But I think it serves a secondary purpose here for Joshua as well. I think it's also God's way of telling Joshua, yes, Moses is dead. He is gone. I took him on the mountain. He's not coming back. And what that means is you are now in charge. In the life of a young leader, he really probably needed that confirmed for him. Because I can speak from experience, it is a whole lot easier to recommend the bold action, the confident, strong action, when you're second in charge. When you're not the one who everyone is going to get mad at when you take the bold action. When I was in Ithaca, I served my internship in my first year of ministry in Ithaca, New York, under Pastor Mike, who's now over at Attica. And he can tell you, I was really good at recommending bold actions. When someone would get a little out of line, I'd be like, yeah, crush them. Go tell them you're the pastor. They need to do what you say. Go be bold. Or that person's in sin. You need to go confront their sin. Go for it. But they have no right to talk to you that way, Pastor Mike. Come on, Pastor Mike. Let them have it. And then I finished my first year of ministry, and I moved to Belfast, New York. And all of a sudden, I wasn't the second anymore. I was out there by myself. And all of a sudden, that person came that inevitably comes when you're in pastoral ministry, and he yelled at me. And I wanted to crush him, right? No, I got scared, I got terrified, I got timid, and all of a sudden my levels of compassion went through the roof because I was in charge now, and now it all laid on my shoulders. All of a sudden, I was the one who was going to have to give an answer for how we handled the situation, and all of a sudden I didn't want to be quite as bold as I had the week before I got to Belfast. I think Joshua's in this position. He has been a general of the army. He has led men into battle. He is not a timid individual. But up until this point, there was always Moses to lean on. There was always Moses to catch him if he messed up. Moses was always there. He was the one who answered to God. He was the one who went up on the mountain and got the tablets. He's the one who had to come down and deal with his rebellious brother who built an idol. It was Moses who had to give an answer. And now what God is saying is, all right, Joshua, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now it's you. Now I'm dealing with you. And he immediately tells him to arise. He says, now therefore arise, go over the Jordan, you and all the people, into the land that I am giving to them. To the people of Israel, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I have promised to Moses. So God is saying, absolutely, Moses is dead. Joshua, you are in charge. Here are your marching orders. We are gonna go take the land. I am going to give these people the land of Israel. So get up, let's go. Every place that the sole of your foot touches is yours from now on. And I'm doing it just as I did for Moses. He says, Joshua, realize Moses, while he was the person who was up front, he was the person that everyone was looking to. Moses was the hero. God saying, really? It was me all along. And the same way that I was with Moses, the same way that I was with him when he struck the rock, the same way I was with him when he struck the rock again when he wasn't supposed to, the same way that I provided meat and manna and all the other miracles you've seen as you've wandered the desert looking to Moses to lead you, the same God is with you. He says, just as I promised it to Moses, I'm promising it to you. Let's go. We're going to get this done. God is saying, I am with you just as I was your predecessor. And now he says, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea towards the going down of the sun shall be your territory. God is reiterating a promise that he made to Israel. He actually made this promise long before this. All the way back in the book of Genesis, we see when God was meeting with Abraham, at this point his name had not even changed, so it's Abram. He made a promise to the people of Israel, the descendants of Abraham. He said, to your offspring, I give this land. From the river of Egypt, that'd be the Nile River, to the great river, the river Euphrates. And the land of the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kedmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. God said, I am going to give you this land. This will be the land of Abraham and his descendants. This is my promise. He repeats that promise in chapter 17, verse 8. He says, and I will give to you and your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. This promise is actually repeated over and over. It's given as an everlasting possession. In one of the other passages I looked at this week, he says, look, even if you get kicked out of the land is still yours. I'll bring you back. It's your land even when you're not there. This land is promised to the children of Abraham. And now, as Joshua is stepping in, Joshua is stepping up to take the place of Moses. What God is doing is repeating it once again to say, I have promised you this land. We're going to get up. We are going to go. We are going to conquer this land. This land is your land. This land that he's talking about is everything in the red. It's a similar map to what we were looking at before. But you notice on the western side, or the leftmost side of the map, you've got the squiggly line that travels north to south. That's the Nile River. That's the one boundary that God has set for the land that he is giving to the people of Israel. On the eastern half, towards the north, you'll see another squiggly line. That line is the Euphrates River. What God has told the people of Israel is that everything that's between those two rivers is theirs. That is the land that God has promised to the nation of Israel. That is the land that he has sent Joshua to go conquer. And what is very important about it is to remember that it is God who gave the land. That is going to be incredible. As we march on to next week and the weeks immediately following, we are going to need to keep in mind that the one who has given this land to the people of Israel is God. Because if we don't keep that forefront in our brain, the next few weeks are going to take us to places that we do not want to go. It is very easy to get distracted and start thinking of God as a cruel individual if we do not keep this forefront in our brain. That in the book of Joshua, it is all about God has given them the land and now he is fulfilling his promise to Israel. But for this week, before we move on to the rest of Joshua, what are the significant bits that we can take away? Well, first, the end of the chapter is not the end of the book. This is a new chapter for the nation of Israel. This is a new chapter that they are entering. With Joshua in leadership, Moses is gone. But it is not the end of God's plan for his people. It is not the end of what God is doing in the nation of Israel, not by a long shot. We're in the sixth book of a book that has 66 books in it. He is not even close to done with the nation of Israel. But when we get into the position where we are discouraged, where we feel like, man, this thing that I have just walked through, this circumstance that has just come into my life, it feels like the end. It feels like I couldn't possibly take one more step. It feels like, man, with Moses gone, is this really worth it anymore? What God is telling us in the first four verses of Joshua is, yeah, even with Moses gone, God still is at work. God still cares for the people of Israel. God still is on mission to fulfill his purpose in this world. God, even with Moses dead, has a plan for you. He wants to be involved in your life. God wants us to be on mission together as a church. Even with Moses dead, it's not the end of the book. We also see that God rewards faithfulness. Joshua and Caleb come back from spying out the land that scared all 10 other spies and said, no, we have a good God. We're going to stay faithful to our God. We're going to trust our God. We're going to place our reliance upon our God. And as a result, not only are Joshua and Caleb the only two adults who get to go into the land, but Joshua ends up the leader of the nation of Israel. And we'll see that Caleb gets some fairly significant positions as well. God rewards faithfulness, but even more importantly than that, God keeps his promises. At this point, the promise to take the land of Israel had been in Israel's history for over 500 years. For over 500 years, they had heard that they were going to have this land given to them. And after 500 years of not having the land, now they are sitting on the cusp, and God is saying, I'm going to give you the land. I am going to fulfill my promise to you. I'm going to give you the thing that I told you I would give you. And next week, we're going to start that journey. Next week, in the book of Joshua, we are going to start the journey of seeing God fulfill his promise to the nation of Israel. I hope you'll come back and join us. Father, let's pray. Father, I thank you. I thank you that when things seem dire, we know that you haven't given up. We know that we are not without hope. We know that you are God who will keep your promises. Father, I pray as we pursue you, we would be faithful. We would trust you when it seems like everything else has fallen apart. And that we would stay on mission the way Joshua did. Because God, you are a great God who keeps your promises. And we thank you for that in your son's name. Amen.